Welcome to the Homeschool Together podcast. Where one working mom and a stay-at-home dad help you navigate the nuts and bolts of the growing and dynamic world of homeschooling.
With a focus on early learners, like me.
All the ins and outs of building and maintaining your homeschool life.
Homeschool!
Find out tips and tricks to make things like this easier.
I'm reading.
And ultimately, enjoy educating your kids. And what's that last thing?
Have fun together. Did I do good, Daddy?
Yeah, you did, sweetie. Good job. Hello and welcome back to Homeschool Together. Thank you for joining us. Today we're going to be talking about ancient civilizations. So I want you to go down into the show notes, click on our YouTube and hit subscribe and follow us along on our journey as we continue to vlog through our ancient civilizations that we're doing with Build Your Library. Today we are going to be doing kind of a midpoint check-in. We are sitting at lesson number about 20-ish. We're kind of like just starting Rome. So if you guys are following us on YouTube already, you guys kind of know where we are at. But for the rest of you guys, if you happen to not be following us on YouTube and maybe not doing the Build Your Library Ancient Civilizations curriculum yet, we just wanted to kind of tell you where we're at and kind of what we've been doing so far and how that's going. We are going to do an entire wrap-up series like we did with our Around the World's curriculum that we did before. We did it on our podcast and on YouTube. I think we're going to do our wrap-up stuff on YouTube there when we're finally done. So if you guys want to, you know, get started and or if you're thinking about doing this, Ancient Civilizations, you can go ahead and hop over there on YouTube and know that we're going to be doing a lot of wrap-ups towards the end because we're kind of getting trending towards the end of the curriculum, and we'll be doing all of our spines and we'll be doing our final, you know, what we thought about the whole curriculum and all that type of stuff. But today we want to just kind of, you know, talk about where we are and what we're doing and how it is going. So just the basics, this is the Build Your Library. Is this level one? Does she call it level one?
Or? Yeah, this is level one.
We have so many curriculums, Ariel, that all do levels, and they all do, they either do letters or they do numbers, and I can't keep them all in my head.
Yeah, so this is level one, the ancient world, which is supposed to be, you know, around first grade-ish. So this says ages 6 to 8 on it from Build Your Library. If you haven't done Build Your Library yet, it is a online PDF curriculum that is literature based. It's kind of, you know, based loosely on Charlotte Mason. And so it includes a lot of great, what they call living books, which are, you know, more than just kind of a book written by someone kind of loosely about the topic. I think one of our friends is reading Ranger in Time Goes to, you know, like Rome or whatever. It's about this dog that time travels. That's not the kind of books that you get here. Yeah. You get books here that are very, very thoughtful and told from like the perspective of someone who was living at that time. And so I think it's really great. It's 36 weeks. So it's, and we're doing it with our 8-year-old. She's, I guess almost 8 and a half.
We started when she was 7. She was about 7 and a half.
Yeah. So we've been doing this for a while, and our 4-year-old is, who's almost 5, is coming along with us. So in every week, you're kind of, you do a little bit of a background of prehistory. And if you followed along with us, we did a combo of Blossom and Root and Build Your Library prehistory before this. So we were all kind of set up with, you know, how the universe was formed and life, you know, evolving and all of these things until really we got to
early humans.
Yeah, early humans and what that was like. And then it was great to kind of segue right into Ancient Civ because the first couple of weeks of this are a little bit of a rehash of prehistoric man. And then, you know, so you're able to kind of jump in. You know, this has got all your big players. This has your Egypt and your Greece and Rome and ancient China. It's also got a lot of stuff about Mesoamerica and, of course, the plethora of peoples who were in the Mesopotamian area through various points in time.
Yeah, the whole Fertile Crescent is a big touch.
Right. I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on there. Yeah. There's some South American and Mesoamerican stuff. Lots of Mesopotamia and then the kind of the big cultures. There's only a really brief touch into Kushites, really brief hit on kind of the...
India and then...
Yeah, like 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks or 3 weeks on India.
2 or 3 weeks on
so
India.
So there's that. So those are kind of...
It's going to be about 3 weeks in China as well. So the bulk of the curriculum is Paleolithic, Neolithic man arising in kind of that Egypt, Turkey, Iraq, Iran area, that Fertile Crescent area. And then... just the various incarnations of different civilizations that took over those areas over the span of like four or 5,000 years.
Right.
And so that's kind of your focus. You don't really go very far. You don't hit any like Polynesian stuff or Australian cultures or, you know, even North American cultures. I think the stuff here that they focused on was really in the Peru area, the Incan, kind of, not Incan civilizations, but kind of the Nazca people who are very early in the Peru area.
And so then there was Mayans,
there
right?
was a little bit of the Mayans in Mexico, but that's about it. So that's all you get on the North and South America. So it's really focused there kind of on that Central Asia landmass.
Yeah, and North Africa. Yep. So that's kind of, you know, basically, so if there's other areas, you know, you have family heritage or you're really interested in, you know, going back, I don't think there's any talk of like ancient Japan. I mean, really just focus on ancient China. I can understand why, right? We have to limit it, right? this is a huge topic. And so I know that the creator, Emily Cook, had to, you know, limit it a bit. And what she did was she really followed along with the Main Spine History Quest Early Times, which is from Pandia Press. We'll put a link down in the show notes because you can't buy it on Amazon. You got to get it from them. So anyway, use the link down there.
Yeah, it's a mandatory. It's a mandatory book to purchase for the curriculum. It is the overarching, encompassing spine, the entire curriculum. Walks through chapter by chapter in order with the History Quest book. There's no deviation. It's just one after another after another.
Right. And so that's how, you know, she's really organized it to dovetail right with that book. So you've got that kind of as your main history spine. There's a smattering of other books from some really great like map books like When on Earth from DK. And there's A Child Through Time. So you can see what the lives of different children were like in different time periods. So there's a few other kind of spine books that
there's
are
also the
adjacent.
The Usborne encyclopedia book.
Of world history.
I call it the purple book because it's purple.
Yes, and which is a really fantastic resource. And so I think
that's a great resource that I think serves you before this curriculum if you want to do the same thing that we did. We do the prehistory combo. That helped serve us very well. And then we noticed... obviously, it continues all the way through rest of history, through, you know, Middle Ages, various other areas of the world like China and Japan and those type of things. So if you are going, you know, beyond that, you know, I think her next section, what is the next section?
The next section is medieval
times. So it would help serve you there as well. So that's a great book, I think, just in general to have. And it fits these age ranges perfectly.
Right. Again, the world, the Encyclopedia of World History is not all encompassing. No. There's areas, of course, that they're not touching. So there may be some things that in particular you want to add. But in general, the History Quest Early Times book, that is specific to this level. You'll read through basically the whole book in this curriculum. The other books, When on Earth, Child Through Time, the Encyclopedia of World History, the other spines, those are, as you say, those are longer reaching. So those are kind of, for us, those are investment books. We bought them and then we know that we're going to use them going forward for like, I don't know, not quite 10 years, but you know, we have a 4-year-old, so we're going to use them for a while. So those are great investment there. And then the science-y piece that she adds in here is all about nature.
It's a nature study and nature journal type of thing.
Right. So it's not, you know, it's not super science-y as far as like there's not like experiments and things. It's all more about natural world observation. Mm-hmm. And she uses some really great books for that as well. That's one that honestly for us, we try to hit, but we don't hit it every week because we've got a lot of other things going on. And it kind of ends up falling lower on our priority.
Yeah.
It feels like... this feels like primarily a history curriculum. And then like, oh, and there's nature. So
and a little bit of art. And a little bit of environmental research and understanding.
Right. So she's trying to make kind of this all-in-one curriculum by adding in these other pieces. My feeling so far, and I won't speak for you, but my feeling so far is that those are kind of add-ons that I could honestly do without. Yeah. I think we could get, you know, we are not, there's these couple of books, there's like artists you should know and art techniques you should know. Mm-hmm. They're okay. I would rather do maybe an out school art class. And then we're doing a lot of art that is focused around the civilization. Yeah. So that's the thing, is like, you're not necessarily doing art. You're studying, you know, the Persian Empire. You're not doing art about Persia.
No.
You're doing this other thing. So I kind of feel like those are, if you want to say like, hey, this isn't all in one and you can get all the pieces that you need in one curriculum, I think it's great to say that, but I don't know in practice how well that really comes through, because I just don't feel like it gets enough focus to be very meaningful. So what is your thoughts on those pieces?
So to go after maybe the art portion first, the amount of work that's required to do, it's mainly reading in a lot of respects, and then you're encouraged to do art activities as well. Within the curriculum, she gives you ideas on things and projects you can do that obviously are arts and craftsy in a lot of ways. It's not necessarily tied into that book you're reading.
Yeah, or that civilization.
And so in you're right. In that respect, you kind of wanted to say, well, here, let's try to do like for a working example. You're doing Rome, and we're in the middle, we're just starting Rome, so we don't know if that's the case right now, but okay, mosaics are really, really popular, right? Maybe for the week you would want to focus on, you know, doing mosaic art or dot art or something of that nature as a way to explore the art of the culture that you're studying. She does give you some suggestions in there, and you are encouraged to go and try to find, you know, things that align with those cultures. The study of the art is really something that's not directly related to whatever civilization you're talking about at that moment. And it's more of meant for a general appreciation of art that is something that the learner may recognize, like what type of artists you're talking about, mm-hmm. and that type of thing. So it's not related, and it's not directly, you're not actually tasked with doing something that follows along, you know, this artist or this type of skill. So right. I think it's not 100% related, and I get it. That's a huge challenge. Like, how are you going to do, you know, Neolithic people art, right? Are you going to do finger? Again, you could do finger painting on the walls.
I think there's a lot of art. Yeah. And I think, you know, we definitely need to mention here that after this curriculum was released, after we started using it, Emily actually made a connection and collaboration with Soul Sparklets Glitter Bombs, which is a separate art membership that you need to get. And they provide a whole lot of art activities, and they have things that kind of dovetail with it. So if you want to do art that's not like look it up on Pinterest and find some ways to do art, you can decide to do that membership. For us, it was a little bit pricey, and so we haven't tried it yet. It's something that I'd like to maybe investigate in the future, mm-hmm. When our younger daughter is a little bit older. But that's a piece of it too. One thing that we did is we added in a really great book by DK called Art That Changed History. So rather than studying these great painters and their different art techniques, I was like, well, let's just leave that for when they lived and when that art arose. So instead we've used this other book. And when it came to cave art, mm-hmm. we looked at like, you know, what kind of art was happening at that time. And mm-hmm. you said there was that kind of mosaic art that at one point became a big thing during Alexander's time, right? So we went ahead and kind of did art projects and things that mimicked the type of art at that time, mm-hmm. which I thought was more valuable than learning about art techniques that happened later in the 1600s or whatever. Yeah. You know, like,
it's not as much as the art technique, but doing art that identifies with the historical time. So that's maybe if you talk about art in that respect, that's probably a better way. And I have found, you know, as we're doing the week and I want to do an activity with them because there is a lot of reading, I do like to do activities while they're reading, when mm-hmm. I'm doing the reading. They enjoy that. They can listen while they're doing whatever they're doing. And that helps to fill the time, and we can hit, you know, two birds mm-hmm. with one stone. It's kind of what I do with when she is doing her timeline work. So I'm reading to her while she's coloring picture, right. you know, coloring a character or doing cutting something out. So there's that element there. But with respect to like maybe even the science curriculum, as you kind of pointed out, you're right. It doesn't tie in, but I don't even know how you could tie in a science curriculum to the history that you're doing. So that I'm not going to be critical in that respect.
Oh no, I'm not. I'm not saying that the science should tie in with the history.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just saying that I feel a little bit like I just feel a little bit like the science is more of an afterthought. I don't feel like, we've done Blossom and Root Science where I felt like it was really,
the
science was its own, it could have stood alone, right? Whereas I don't think this science could stand by itself. That being said, it's first grade.
So I'll give you the reason why I think we kind of feel meh about the science is that this is probably our third or fourth go around with a nature-based walkabout and explore the nature around your house. Do things outside type of science curriculum. And I think we're just looking for something more or different. And I think I'm just getting tired of saying, well, let's go walk outside and look at leaves.
Well, that's true. I mean, we did do a nature study when we did level K and we did the Blossom and Root nature study, which was very good.
I've been doing nature studies for the last 3 years. So I'm kind of I'm ready to just talk about something else.
Well, and our kids are really interested in experiments.
Yeah.
Our kids are very interested in that. So that's not, experiments is not something that you're going to get in this iteration of science. And I think,
but if there's a family out there who's listening to this right now and they're about to start their first homeschool curriculum or they haven't done a nature study before,
well, this is very gentle.
Then this will be very gentle. It's very fun. The journaling book is really good. The whole activity set around it and the supplemental books that she has, maybe minus one or two here and there, but most of the supplemental books that go with the nature study or quote unquote the science portion of this are very good. Like it's enjoyable. You will find a good excuse to get outside. I'm being critical because it's like I've done so many nature studies now.
So if this was Blossom and Root, I mean it's not, but just knowing that we've done levels of Blossom and Root, she would have a nature study and then a science, and they would not be the same thing because nature study is. It's just a little bit, I mean, yes, of course, there's science. There's science involved in everything.
Yeah.
But I just think that if your learners really love science, this is not going to give you enough for this. This is great, as you said, for let's get out and let's study leaves and trees and learn about seasons. And I think that's awesome for first grade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think in any way that detracts from this curriculum as far as like, I think this is absolutely worth the price of admission for the history.
Oh yeah.
I don't think that because we're saying like the science isn't super sciencey, that it's not totally 100% worth it because we do believe it is. I just want to kind of caveat for those families that like experiment based science and things, and their kids really like to get hands on with stuff. This is really just going to be all about nature. And there's some really good books. I mean, great books that are chosen for that. But know that this is a nature study. I don't know that for our family, it always ticks our, like, it scratches our science itch necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think also we have to understand that, build your library. What is its bread and butter? It's books, right? It's literally in the title. And maybe to find an analogy is like, I'm not going to be so critical of the butcher and their quality of their vegan burger that they sell. This is not their specialty.
But I wouldn't want a family who was like, they really want to do all kinds of experiment-based stuff to think that this is going to satisfy their science for their family.
Yeah.
And just know it going in is my only kind of thing.
And I don't know how it goes into the future with, when she gets to medieval times, like what is the new science thing and whatnot. So feel free as always. And I think the one thing that I always like to say with any of these type of curriculums, if something isn't working for your family, it doesn't mean you toss out the whole curriculum. So say,
absolutely not.
Like if you're more artistically inclined family, or you have an art degree, or you're an artist and you want to just jettison the entire art section and you want to do your own thing. Right? There's nothing wrong with doing that. And I encourage that type of behavior with respect to modifying curriculum to fit what you know best, what your family enjoys best. If your kids are 100% not outdoor kids and you want to do science in a different way, maybe through streaming TV or through home experiments, or you want to do like a whole Minecraft engineering thing because your kids are really into Minecraft, do that. That is what you should do. And it doesn't hurt. I tell you what, Emily doesn't, it's not hurting her feelings if you take away her art section and fill it with something else. And then you do everything, do the rest of the curriculum. Nobody is going to be critical of you. And the cost is what you said, the cost of admission is so low for this curriculum. It's you have that freedom to make it what you want and encourage you to do that. I mean, we've made changes in books. We've made changes in spines. We brought in some of our own spines.
Right.
We have added writing activities and stuff that we that are not called out in the curriculum. I mean, yeah, there's the narration, there's the copy work, and all the typical things you would see with a Charlotte Mason curriculum that Emily does. But we've added things. And it doesn't detract from the curriculum. It just says, hey, these are things we want to focus on as a family. And that's the great thing. Again, that's why we homeschool, is we do the things we want to do.
This curriculum is $40
Yeah.
for a PDF, and it's 36 weeks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a no-brainer for us to have that structure to get, we got exposure to books through this that we wouldn't have otherwise known about.
100%.
And I think that the flow really works. The History Quest book really works. I think it's great.
Should we talk about History Quest a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about History Quest because this is new.
We've had people ask us, you know, what do you guys think about History Quest?
So I will preface, there is a History Quest like study guide or workbook thing. We didn't use that. No. I have heard really great things about that. We may use that the next time around. Okay. I know people have been asking about that. So this is just the reader book. And what the reason this is kind of important to talk about, one is, I mean, it's such a through line through the whole curriculum, but also this curriculum used to use Story of the World and went forward with Story of the World, which the Ancients level has some parts of that that are Christian. So that's obviously why, you know, we want to make a secular change. So History Quest will be used in level one and level two, but they haven't made anything for early modern and modern times yet. So it's going to go...
That's specifically Pandia Press.
Pandia Press hasn't. So it's going to go back to Story of the World level three and four. So just know, to my understanding, the only religious content is in level one of Story of the World. The other levels don't have any. But, you know, that is, of course, the author's worldview. So just, you know, be aware. So this is like the first... I want to say this is like the first year. This book just came out maybe last year. I mean, it's pretty new. Mm-hmm. And so not everyone has experience with this. And if you have an older version of the curriculum that has Story of the World, just go ahead and email Emily and she'll send you an updated link, which, you know, not for nothing, something I super appreciate about this author is that when she makes an update, she's willing to give that to folks who already purchased it without charge.
Absolutely.
I know that's something that the Torchlight creator doesn't do. So know that, you know, when you make an investment in Build Your Library, if you're going to use it for, you know, multiple children, when there is an update, you're going to get that. So that being said, History Quest is the main book. And can you talk a little bit about the structure of it?
Absolutely. So it's about 500 pages long, but you're going to be reading that slowly over 36 weeks. So don't worry too much. On the weekly reading, for most weeks, there's a couple weeks where it's a little different, where Emily has kind of stretched out a civilization a little bit. So you may read the book slower, or you may read an alternative book for a week, and then you'll come back to the History Quest. So just understand that, like, for Rome, and I think she did this for Greece, and I think there was another, I think India did this as well, where she kind of stretched it out just to give a little bit more time to kind of allow you to explore that civilization, as opposed to just doing it in 1 week. So just let you know that the weeks of the curriculum do not match the weeks in the book, but they match in order. So there's no jumping around. Basically, a section of the book is essentially two chapters. You have this first introductory chapter on the time, place, people, history of that area. And the writing is, I have to say...
It's like on point.
It is on point with the amount of information that you would want to give to a 7 or 8 year old about that civilization. It tells high points, it tells major themes of why the civilization is important. That's one of the things that I think is really hard from an educator, like if you had to do this on your own, to answer the question, why were the Sumerian people so important? Right. Like, oh my gosh, like, why were the Assyrians important? Why were the Babylonians important?
I mean, a lot of these were names I had heard, but I literally knew nothing
about
them before we did this.
And time and place and why and where. This book helps you answer all those questions and tells you those big movements. Sometimes they will pick big names, like if there was a big person who was involved in that civilization, say the civilization goes for 300 or 400 years before they get taken over by another one. They'll tell you, okay, King Nebuchadnezzar was a number one dude for Babylon or whoever, right? Or obviously with Greece.
Number one dude.
Yeah, number one dude. A lot of number one dudes. Like Greece, you're going to talk about Greece, a lot of things with Greece. And then all of a sudden you're going to have the Macedonian boy who came down from from on high and took over most of the world, Alexander. And so they have a whole chapter on that. So you talk a lot about people and places and activities, and also a lot of the accomplishments of the civilization. The Phoenicians were known for their purple dyes and their sailing and the language, their written text. So they'll tell you about that. That's really, really good. And that can help you get into the flow of what you want to study for that week. Emily does a great job and gives you some high bullet points on things you want to probably focus this week. I like that from the standpoint of an educator, so that it helps me say, okay, we're going to focus on writing and ships. Mm-hmm. Great. I'm just going to go and get some supplemental stuff when I'm doing my Google searches or am I doing YouTube searches. I'm not saying, what are the Phoenicians known for? I'm going to search Phoenician shipping, Phoenician boats, and then we're going to watch videos on that, and mm-hmm. I'm going to reinforce a lot of what was happening. So the book does a really good job at giving you those points, giving you that brief history. Then it has a second chapter, and they call that a history hop. And this is a chapter that is written in second person. So it is, you are coming here, and you are doing this, and you have flown down from the sky. Mm-hmm. You are now in this dream world in Mesoamerica, and you're within the god. It was some like fantasy story or something like that. You're in one of their fairy tales or their mythology stories, or you're on the battlefield overlooking Alexander's battle at Gagamella, or you're riding with Hannibal through the Alps in on the back of an elephant. That type of stuff is what you do on the history hops, and they tend to dive deep onto a character. Typically, and they have men and women all the way through, and they will have you highlight with that character, and that character will then be essentially explaining to you that time period, something important is happening, why it is important, and you get a little bit more of a deeper dive, almost sort of like a fictional telling of something in that time period. Mm-hmm. And my daughter really likes the history hops. I'm not a big second person reading fan. That's sort of like, you get that a lot in the choose your adventure books, because they're telling you, like, you have come here.
Right. Now I don't care for that either.
You have to make this decision and that type of thing. It's been really good. I've really enjoyed it. The reading is on point with the respect to how much time you have to spend reading this book. Typically, Emily breaks it up into two readings, say like a Monday and a Wednesday, and that gets you through the main chapter, the first chapter that tells you the history. And then typically on like a Friday or a third day in the week, you do the history hop. And the readings are comparable. The main chapter on the civilization that's telling you about the history, it could take you two sittings, 15 minutes apiece. I tend to do it in one sitting. So we just read that one chapter and then I'm done. And then we do some activities or some additional learning about that. Typically on a second day, I will do the history hop. And then again, I will try to do some additional reading. If it's a famous person, we'll try to learn about that person. If it's a famous event, we'll try to learn about that event. If it's on a theme or something that is unique to that civilization, like, oh, the Hittites or the Assyrians were really good at making steel or iron, right? Iron tools. And so we'll look up Assyrian iron making or how to make iron and that type of thing. That is what we end up doing. So it's typically for me, I break it up into 2 days of reading. So we read that first chapter and then we read the second. And like I said, there are some weeks she drags that out. So the first chapter might be dragged out across 1 week, and then the history hop will be the second week. That only happened a couple times. So most weeks you're going to be reading that first chapter and that second chapter. And that's going to be the main spine of what you read. And then you'll have supplemental books that feed into those themes and into those characters and those people.
I think it's important to note here, you're talking about adding media, which is not something that is really found in this curriculum. So if your family, wants to watch movies about these time periods, or you love documentaries or, YouTube videos and things, none of that stuff is going to be linked here. So you're going to be on your own to find that. If you decide to do this, that's where our vlog is really helpful on YouTube, because we list all the videos and movies and things that we watch. But that's something that's not, inherently part of this. I would say the other thing that is not often part of this is hands-on activities. It's a lot of reading of, we talked a little bit about the art, but there's not a lot of like hands-on crafting, or there's no food.
She gives you ideas, and in some weeks there are you know, activities that she gives you and some are not. So it's kind of a mixed bag on, you know, week to week. I have found myself over time moving more and more towards the Google method of crafting, which is Sumerian art projects. Images. What have all the other moms done?
Yeah.
And if you're gonna watch, I think we'll probably have a few of those on our YouTube video, but you'll have seen some nice craft projects that I've done, and I'm like, and
lots of coloring pages
lots of coloring pages,
because we have a four-year-old, and yeah, sometimes exactly. That's chaos.
Well, and I think a lot of the coloring pages for me helps me with the timeline, because she gives you these nice kind of images on the back of the time of the curriculum that you can cut out and color and then put into your timeline. I sometimes just want to, like, hey, add some few more things, right? Here's a picture of an elephant. We're doing Hannibal, or, you know, here's some, you know, other stuff and whatnot, and put it in your timeline. And right. So I find I have to print off a lot of stuff, but also I just like having them, you know, if I'm reading about a famous person, let me print off a picture of that famous person and have you draw that famous person. Or not draw them, but like color them in while I'm reading about the famous person. I find that helps to, I don't know, reiterate what we're learning.
I think there's good reinforcement there. You know, and the other thing I think we should touch on is this whole idea of the timeline.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a project that goes throughout the whole level. And there are little cutout characters in the back of the book that your learner can color and stick them on the timeline.
They're characters and places, and it's not just people. There's other things that maybe are famous, you know, a famous building or a famous pyramid or something of that nature.
Exactly. And we haven't found the timeline. I don't know. We ended up putting some on poster board, but I think you could definitely do the timeline. Characters are pretty, it's pretty slim. We have added quite a bit to our timeline. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a definite area for, that could use expansion, for your family to, because the whole point of the timeline is to help your kids see this through line through history. And what things were going on at the same time. We have a really great book called History Year by Year, mm-hmm. which helps us to see how, you know, when you study things in this curriculum, everything seems very sequential. But in actuality, a bunch of these civilizations are existing or overlapping.
It's true about the first, you know, 10 civilizations that you're, or 10 weeks. And then all of a sudden, you realize that as the cone expands and the number of civilizations expands, they're all doing this, you know, in constant, you know, they're not in sequence, but they're in parallel. And so some of these civilizations are all existing at one time, which is, I think, it's hard to capture on a timeline. So the timeline I have found super helpful. I went to, Walmart, and I got the trifold, a kind of diorama thing. So I don't know how to describe it other than it cost me about $3 for one of these things. So go into there's probably like the arts and crafts section. There tends to be in our Walmart. There's like three or four levels of a rows, and it tended to be with, I think, the paper section. So it was all the way at the end where the cardboard or the poster board is. And I got these nice fold out open clamshell type of, diorama boards. And they're a little bit bigger than a sheet of paper when it's all kind of folded together. I got like two or three of these, and we're just slowly filling them up. That the super low investment. And then what I did is I drew three lines across it. And so she's just kind of like going from left to right, and then kind of comes down and goes from right to left, and then comes down and goes left to right. And in that snaking pattern, I think I got the first 10, 12 weeks on that one. And then we got another 10 or 12 weeks on the second one that we have. And I think I'm going to have to get one more. And then we'll have essentially three timeline dioramas that can kind of just sit next to them. What I like about it is you fold them up and you just store them on the shelf.
Right. I think that those are great, especially if you have a small space or you don't want your house to be, you know, littered with a
huge
timeline.
Some people do the whole wall timeline.
I think the next time around, I'd love to do that. I was looking at the Montessori.
Ariel, which wall of our house do you want to sacrifice?
Like the hallway wall here. So
every time her friends come over, they know right where we are in our ancient civilizations.
Everyone knows we're homeschooling. All of you out there, if you're homeschooling right now, if you're not just thinking about homeschooling, you know this to be true. You can't hide it. The people walk into your house, the moment they walk into your house, you've got science experiments around, you've got art all over the place.
Big crates full of books.
There's so many books. There's so much curriculum. I mean, you've got math manipulatives coming out your ears. Everyone knows you're homeschooling.
Yeah, you get
it's impossible. Even if you have a dedicated homeschool room, it's almost impossible to contain it in that space. So
my mom's one of the ladies that has like the curio cabinets with like crystal things and really fancy things. I know when she walks into our house, she's like, you guys built these beautiful cabinets. And they're like, it's just nothing but kids' books. I'm like, yeah, well, this is school.
We keep adding extra bookshelves. And she's like, how many bookshelves does one house need? And we're like, well, more, clearly. Mother, we don't have enough.
How many curio cabinets does one household need?
Right.
And she's like, okay, I'm going over here now.
Right. So I really think that if you can get the timeline up on a wall, if you want to take a roll of paper, you know, and just put it out there. I was looking at inspiration from the Montessori timeline of life, right, where it talks about, you know, how life evolved. And, you know, civilizations are a lot like that, right? Because you talked about civilizations are taken over and different things. And I think kind of taking that, you know, maybe we'll put a link in the show notes to the Montessori timeline of life. You know, if you use something like that as maybe a template, I would love to see that, because then you could see the throughput in different areas of the world, how civilizations either overlapped or one kind of fed into the other.
They were concurrent or.
Right. As one rose, the other was falling. You know, I mean, like, I think it would be neat to see that perspective the next time around. Because definitely in the curriculum, they've got a couple of timeline pages at the end that you could kind of, they're just 8.5 by 11 sheets that you kind of stick together, and then you could cut out these little figures. But I would love to see us do something a little bit more comprehensive. Next time, even roll up and roll, you know, you could even roll it across the whole dining room table and then just roll it back up. Yeah. I think that could be a really fun thing.
Yep. Moving on to the chapter books, I think have been fairly good. I've noticed about, if I could ballpark a percentage, 65, maybe 2/3 of the books were time period related. And it looks like about 1/3 of the books are not. Mm-hmm. And those would be like, oh, the week where we had to read Winnie the Pooh, or you know, we have Nim's Island coming up, or we read Despero. Like, those are books that are not aligned with the time period. But I don't know, you know, other than reading, I have it right here. Where is it? The Clan of the Cave Bear for Neolithic Man.
I don't think that's even appropriate for kids.
Yeah, no, I know. But like, finding books that are, you know, Paleolithic focused or Neolithic focused,
and some of those
might be more of a challenge.
Yeah, when you're doing Fertile Crescent, there's some of those weeks where you're going from civilization to civilization because they didn't last for long periods of time, and it's really hard to find books. But then there's other books that are absolutely terrific different. You know, we read The Golden Bull from Mesopotamia. Was fantastic.
The Egypt diary was really good.
Right, where you're telling the story from the perspective of an Egyptian scribe. I mean, so there is some. I think other than maybe Winnie the Pooh, which, you know, just wasn't our jam, we have loved every book.
Wasn't your honey, Ariel.
Aha. Uh-huh. we have loved every book that we've read through this. So ultimately, I think going out of it right now, of course we added spines because we just can't help ourselves and we love books. But if you just followed this even to the letter, I think it gives a great foundation for first grade. Some of these are kind of heady topics, and I think it's covered really well for this age group. Obviously, we're doing it with a little bit older learner, but also our 4-year-old's coming along, and we're quite amazed at how much she's picking up and how interested she is in some of this.
Yeah. And it's really kind of informing us on, you know, obviously we're going to go back and do Around the World again with her, but it's really telling us, okay, she's kind of ready for something like this, and it's going to be fun. Another thing that I noticed with the curriculum is that she has these beautiful checklists, or kind of like day by day. And you really want to just like go off of that beautiful grid, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or, you know, she has day one, day two, day three. And you want to go ahead and do all the things there. But I would really say you got to hop into her more detailed daily descriptions, because there's a lot of stuff in those daily descriptions that are not in that just simple grid of activities. She has like additional words and additional comments and themes
and craft ideas
are all in the daily description. So the way we printed it off was front and back on there, and we put it in a binder. And then I tend to check off on the weekly kind of that grid chart, but I have to go into the daily pages and actually look and make sure, have I done everything that was asked for this day? Now, again, you don't have to do all the things on the one day. And that's like your day. That's just a suggestion, more guidelines, as Pirates of the Caribbean says. It's guidelines. I tended to have like days where I would do a lot of one type of content. So I would do day 1, 3, 4, and 5 of the reading. And then I'll do the next day, you know, the poetry, the supplemental books, the art project, and maybe some of these other things. So I'm essentially like, here's all the things you have to do this week or in this week's lesson. and just go ahead and pick all the things you want to do for that day, and then go ahead and next day pick a bunch of things. You don't have to just do day one, day two, day three. I wouldn't tie yourself to that. Find what works best for you. Like when we get into reading stretches, I find I can do a lot of reading. My daughter can really listen for a long time, so I can get a lot of the reading done for the week. That is more nonfiction based. Now with the daily reading, with respect to like the chapter books, that's something I really follow to what she's doing, because there's a lot of activities that she has of like the narration cards and the copy work that is associated directly to that chapter that you just read. So you do want to try to keep that up. And also, you don't want to get behind, because then all of a sudden you feel like, oh gosh, we just finished the week, but I'm like four chapters behind in the chapter book. And you don't want to get behind. In some respects, I like to stay ahead. So use those weekends to help make up time. Use the nighttime reading when you're putting your kids down for bed to help catch up a little bit. I do reading at breakfast. So when the kids are sitting there eating breakfast and just crunching on cereal or whatnot, I'm doing the reading as well. Mm-hmm. Really find those times to get the chapter books in, because I think that of all the stuff in the whole curriculum, the chapter books are going to be the ones that get you with respect to feeling behind or feeling like you're not doing everything. Because it is hands down the biggest time commitment in the curriculum is the chapter book reading.
Luckily,
it's not all the time. Like there are some books that are a little bit easier to read, but if you get into like the Aru Shah book, and you can go look on our episode about that, that's a long read. There are some other books that are a little bit longer reading. That even the Despereaux book is a long read.
Yeah, it is.
It's an easy read, but it's a long read, and you're reading two or three chapters at a time. When we did the Odyssey book, even though those chapters were only like three or four pages, you had to read three of them. So, okay, now you're reading 10, 12 pages a day, and you're like, okay, when do I have time to do this? Oh, I'm really busy today, or today's not really a good homeschooling day because it's Wednesday and we have all these things going on. Oh gosh, now I'm behind, and now I got to catch up. And just as a word warning, the chapter books is going to be the thing that gets you. That's where you're going to have the most anxiety. That's where you're going to feel like you're the most behind. Everything else is fairly straightforward and easy to do. This is the stuff that I have found myself to be like, oh gosh, I got to catch up now. We got to catch up, sweetie. We got to catch up.
But the chapter books in many ways are the gold. And luckily, a lot of these chapter books for us, we had the option to get them in audio format from the library. Mm-hmm. We didn't often exercise that option, but it was there in case we needed it. So when you're talking about time, I think this is important to say, irrespective of our crazy schedule and what we've got going on, what do you think the hour commitment is per week for this?
If you just did what she did, and just do what she has outlined in the...
Yeah, without all the crazy things your wife added.
Without the extra stuff that we have added, the extra spines, even doing a lot of extra media. We do movies as well. So we layer in a lot of extra content. If you just did what she had, 3 hours a week maybe, at the most.
Even with the reading?
The reading, I think, maybe adds another hour. Maybe
okay, so 4 hours
a week. I would say anywhere between 4 to 6 hours a week. That would be a nice ballpark, depending on how fast you read and how much time you need, and obviously gauging what your learner enjoys. Like if they don't like to be read to on a nonfiction content for, you know, a half hour long, maybe you're going to have to read it in the cadence she has, which is read 2 or 3 pages, pause, do some activities, do something else. My daughter can handle being read to.
Yeah, both our daughters really like it.
They really like it. So that's maybe where you might have to have some wrinkles on how you handle it. But I'm nothing more than 5 or 6 hours a week at the most, if you just did what she has in the book.
Right. And I think that's good. And with our content, I'm sure we're adding another
couple hours.
2 hours probably to it.
But we sprinkle it in and around just our daily lives. Like we'll watch a movie. Right. We'll watch it at night with the family, and we'll watch it together. And it's, you know, correlated to the curriculum.
Exactly.
But they don't know that. And in the afternoon when daddy wants to take a little nap on the couch, you know, I'll go and dial up some YouTube videos on a famous battle or something like that, you know, whatever it might be. You can fit in the extra time and the extra work. But for me, most of the time I have about 3 days to do homeschool with the curriculum on top of my math and reading and all the other stuff we do. I kind of sprinkle that almost every day. But with respect to this curriculum, I have about 3 days. And in those 3 days, I have 2 mornings that are very clearly used. And I have about an afternoon and a half to use on the other time.
Right.
So about 3 days worth, because I consider days being about 3 or 4 hours of available homeschool, because we have other activities and other things we have to do. And, you know, sister is at preschool. We got to go get her. We got to do some shopping. We got to do all these things, right? You got sports and you have this and what. When I talk a day, I have, that's about 4 hours of available time, right? So about just over half of what a normal public schooler has in a day. That's my window. I don't use the whole window. She does violin in that time, or Irish step dance.
Yeah,
there's we all do kinds basketball of practice, volleyball practice. We do other things as well in that time frame. But I get all my reading, I get all the history work, I get all the activities, the gameplay, the, you know, sometimes watching of shows or media or whatnot in that time frame. It's in there. It's all blocked in there. So I only do about 3 days worth of this type of homeschooling. And if we're behind, obviously I will catch up. And most of the time that is just chapter book reading.
Right.
To catch up.
I think that overall, just giving you a little perspective of our schedule.
Yeah. You have to fit it in with, you know, what your life needs. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think that overall, I think the message is that so far with what we've done, it really seems to be the right, I think it seems to be a good level of workload for first grade.
And one other thing, maybe just another wrinkle with respect to time. We have noticed if you've been following us on our YouTube channel, if you haven't, we have noticed a couple of weeks where we were happy to condense the curriculum. So where she's kind of expanded, it felt like she expanded and it made it a little thin. And you can go ahead and just collapse it from the week. If you're feeling like, oh, 6 weeks of Rome is too much, or so much of, you know, Greece is too much.
Yeah, or Egypt. So there's a couple of them that are very long.
Very long. And we're talking like when you do 4 or 5 weeks on something, you're spending over a month on this concept. And maybe your learner gets burnt out on that and you can collapse. Or consequently, if you collapse a week of Egypt, you might add another week of this one, or maybe add another week here. It's all up to you, but we have found, so out of the 36 weeks, I'm guessing about 3 of those weeks can be collapsed down. So you're really looking at, if you're trying to...
This is based on what we've already done and looking forward into the History Quest work coming up.
Rome is 6 weeks, and I'm having a feeling we're not going to...
Yeah, some of these are a little long in the tooth, but then, you know, like our daughters really loved Greece, and they wanted to stay in Greece. So I think it'll all even out into this 36 weeks, but... Overall, so far, we're happy with it. Like we said, check out our YouTube if you want to look at the extra spines and things that we added and the extra media that we did. But, you know, I think as a history primer into ancient civs for early elementary,
solid.
This is more than, I mean, that I remember getting when I was in school.
Again, the little wrinkle that I've always enjoyed about doing these homeschool curriculums is I learn a lot myself.
Yeah, and we've learned a ton so far.
There's a lot of enjoyment. I take a lot of enjoyment learning about these ancient civilizations. Hit on a bunch of ones that I've heard about but didn't know a lot of details about. You've brought in a lot of adult books as well to help you follow along.
That's been a nice, I try as much as I can, but
and it really feels like a curriculum. If you're sitting out there and you have like a 7 or 8 year old and you also have a 10 year old, it does not feel like you can't just add a couple books and do it with the, you know, have your older learner read some books.
Because as you said, we're learning a ton. I think that this is definitely,
you can definitely scale this up.
This is well suited for a family study, you know, with 100%. With some options. And when we come back to this, our older daughter will be 10. And so we're going to have to do that again and add some things. But so far we've been happy with the choice. So if this is something you've been on the fence about, you know, check out our videos. But otherwise, I don't think you can really go wrong with this if your family's interested in history and you want to dive into that. It's been a good study so far that we've enjoyed.
Yeah, and we'll do a full wrap up when we're all done. We have another probably 16 weeks to go, about just over halfway right now. And we'll do some deeper wrap ups, and those will be on YouTube as well. So we'll let you guys know when we finish that, but we'll probably do the wrap up videos there because it's a lot of show and tell with respect to the books and talking about the curriculum and showing how we do everything. So we'll do that on YouTube. We'll let you guys know here on the podcast when that's available, but we just want to let you know kind of where we're at right now with this. And it's been good. It's been exciting, and we're looking forward to more.
Thanks so much for joining us today and making us a part of your homeschool journey. Please engage with us on social media. Join our Homeschool Together podcast group on Facebook and find us at Homeschool Together Podcast on Instagram. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions, and recommendations. Until next time,
happy homeschooling!